This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
DIY has always been a staple of the resourceful. In this modern age where so much content is available at a finger press, now is a better time than ever for someone trying to build a cabinet or steady a shaking table. One person helping people by passing on his construction knowledge is Jimmy DiResta. Jimmy is an artist, designer and master builder. With over 43 years of experience, he has developed a comfort in construction tools and confidence in building whatever strikes his fancy. Good afternoon, I'm Jermaine B and this is Careers Unusual, where we speak to people with jobs that are off the beaten path. On the show today is DIY master Jimmy DiResta. Prior to this, Jimmy has hosted TV shows about construction over the past decade, such as Trash to Cash, Hammered with John and Jimmy DiResta, and Dirty Money. He now runs a YouTube channel where he documents his DIY processes along with sharing tips and tricks for DIY enthusiasts.
Hi, I'm Jimmy DiResta, and I am a DIY master, so some people say.
So, Jimmy, DIY master, how old were you when you started gaining a passion for construction?
I started making things just in America. We have what's kindergarten, what's called kindergarten. It's the very, very beginning of your schooling, about 5 or 6 years old. And I started right there and then working with blocks and glue and construction paper and scissors and clay, just right away. It's from the very beginning.
So what was the first thing you've ever built?
Well, the first thing that I built that I actually really remember, it might be in my Instagram. My dad helped me with it a little bit, but it was a cutout of a seahorse. And I used what at the time was a Dremel tool, and I carved the face of it. And I did that when I was about 8 years old. And that was the first thing that I built that I looked at, and I was really like, wow, I can't believe I just made this. It was like one of those things that really made me proud to have made it myself.
So Jimmy, your dad taught you how to build and work on this construction pieces?
My dad put me in the environment. Yeah, my dad actually always encouraged me. He saw early on that I had a penchant for making things, so he always put tools in front of me. He bought me my first set of chisels, my first rotary tool. He put me in front of a jigsaw when I was a little kid for the first time, bandsaw, table saw. He said, okay, now you try it. He showed me, and now you try. I mean, I remember each one of those moments.
I suppose he looks at all this as toys for you.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, he still buys me stuff. My dad's still healthy. And he's always finding me cool new stuff.
That's great. And how do you decide that entertainment or education was the direction that you wanted to take in your skills?
I was always making things, and I had a natural ability to teach it as well. When I was a student, I was always a little bit more advanced than the other students. And I say specifically the reason being is because I just had a lot of curiosity. So if I was curious about a subject or a technique, I would just jump into it and keep playing with it and figuring it out. I have no fear of failure. And I noticed that with a lot of students, they have a fear of failure. So I would come to school with some successful thing I made, and all my other fellow students would be like, who taught you that? How'd you know how to do that? Where did you begin to do that? And I'd say, I just went to the store, bought the material and experimented. And they're like, well, how did you know you weren't going to fail? I'm like, I didn't know I wasn't going to fail. I thought I would end up throwing it all away, but I just experimenting. So I never had that fear. So in the beginning, I was already inspiring other students in my college class, because they would see that I was fearless, and then they began doing it, and I'd give them a little instruction. And then soon after I graduated college, my teacher hired me to teach his undergraduate students as well.
And I understand that you and your brother joint forces in this business. So when did you both decide to do that together?
Well, I have two brothers, and one brother I've been on camera with, and my other brother I've never been on camera with. So my brother John is the one I've done several TV shows with, and he was trying to pitch a TV show that was about finding garbage and making it into new things. And so I wanted to be a producer on that show. So I over-prepared. And when I went to the meeting with him, we had interest from a TV network. And when I went to the meeting with him, the guy who was going to buy the concept said, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to make everything and design it and build it. And he says, well, if your brother is a comedian and you're a builder, why don't you just be the builder guy and your brother be the funny guy and you guys go on camera together? And we looked at each other and he goes, are you okay with that? And my brother said, sure. And I said, okay. And so that's how it really began, doing stuff on TV.
Interestingly, I see that you both had a popular video, the AK-47 guitar, or gutta as you called it.
Oh, yeah.
How exactly did your paths cross with Wyclef Jean?
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, my accountant and my accountant who's been, he's been working with artists for a long time. Obviously in America, artists have a bizarre source of income. And I, like me, I have many different sources of income. And so I have an accountant that's a creative, it works with creatives. And he was working with Wyclef on some sort of investment. And Wyclef said he wanted to make a guitar in the shape of a gun, reminiscent of, I can't remember his name, maybe Peter Tosh had one in the early 60s or in the early 70s. So he was being inspired by that early Peter Tosh guitar. Peter Tosh was protesting the Vietnam War, so he had a guitar in the shape of a M16, which was sort of the gun, the popular gun of the time. Mm-hmm. And so when Wyclef said he wanted a gun guitar, my accountant, who he was having the conversation with, said, I know the perfect person. And I got a phone call. And then within a couple of days, I met Wyclef. We discussed the idea. Within a couple of days, I had like the first half-done prototype.
Okay.
And he says, I need it done immediately because he loved it so much. And he was shooting a video and he wanted to have it for the video. So it went from being like, oh, look what I made after our conversation to like, can you finish it tomorrow? And that's why I made the video, because I just jumped right into it.
I mean, I'm just curious, how do you figure out how to make a guitar from a gun? Like, how do you look at the rifle and say, I know how to make a guitar out of this? I mean, it's interesting. Share with us.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, if you notice in that video, I actually just use, it's an airsoft rifle of an AK-47. And I just use that as an inspiration just to see the exact details and how I could mimic those details. I couldn't really use any of those parts, partially because they were sort of out of scale. I would have had to make the whole thing, attaching it to the gun, attaching the idea of a gun to that guitar, I would have had to scale up all the parts just so the scale looks appropriate. And so I had to remake the butt of the rifle. I had to remake the handle and banana clip. So I just used the airsoft rifle as an inspiration. But marrying those two together, you just have to make decisions. What's going to be big? What's going to be the right size? And, you know, if I was going to do the gas tube on top, where is it going to attach? If it attaches to the fretboard, you know, I just kind of made, I took a lot of liberties, but obviously people like it. So
how much do you invest in making some of these things?
That was, I mean, Wyclef paid me back for some of the stuff, but we kind of took a roll of the dice with that one. I bought the guitar was $700. And then my time, I invested my time. I happened to have the airsoft rifle just as a reference. I guess you might say that video cost like $1,000 to make, which isn't a lot of money in retrospect.
Let's go back a little bit to your TV show that you mentioned when you work with your brother John on Dirty Money. Is that true?
Dirty Money was the fifth TV show that we did. I did, in sequential order, I did a show called Trash to Cash with John DiResta, and I was the builder when my brother was the host. That was the one I first talked about. And then we did a show called Hammered, and then I personally did a show without my brother called Against the Grain that was on the DIY network. I did a guest appearance on a show called Blog Cabin several times. That was a DIY show. And then the most recent show we did, or the last show we did, which was in 2011, was a show for Discovery Network here in America, and that was called Dirty Money.
So let's drill a little deeper into Dirty Money. It's a show where you dumpster dive for potential treasures. What were some of the responses you got from the people who saw you climbing into dumpsters?
Oh, well, this is the Lower East Side in New York. Everybody's always picking garbage out here. No one cares.
Okay.
Everybody's, it's in New York, it's kind of like, you know what, I can't use this anymore. Let me put it on the sidewalk. Somebody will take it. And that's really a lot of the time. Occasionally, you see really good stuff going in the garbage, into the, like the garbage truck, but rarely is something left unclaimed. You know, so it's almost like everyone's just exchanging stuff. Like, I'm done with this, now you can have it, kind of thing.
When we come back, we ask Jimmy about the challenges he faces as a DIY master and his thoughts on the future of his channel. You're listening to Careers Unusual, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to Careers Unusual with me, Jermaine B. And today we're speaking with Jimmy DiResta, a DIY master following his muse and making magic with a shop full of power tools with top-notch artisan skills. Jimmy owns a YouTube channel where he lets the building process speak for itself.
So let's look a little bit into the transition from YouTube after doing television for 6 years. Do you find YouTube easier to operate on than television?
Yeah. I mean, it was tough at first because you're basically working for free. But the television experiences I had compared to YouTube, YouTube is better. It's much better because in the television world, you're working with a team. You're working with a team of people that's constantly looking at their phone, seeing where their next job is going to come from. You know, in a moment's notice, they'll give you a budget to do advertising. And then in 1 minute later, they'll say, you know what, we don't need that advertising. We're going to put it somewhere else. And so you're really at the whim of the network and the people involved in the network production team.
Okay.
With YouTube, it's completely me. I have nobody to answer to and nobody to second guess my decisions.
A lot more straightforward too, I suppose.
Absolutely. I could talk directly to my fans. There's no production company in between. You know, when I do a television show, the production company is usually the buffer between me, the talent, the network, and the fans. And so now with YouTube, my fans ask me a comment in the comment section. If somebody needs me for some reason, you know, and I really feel it's important to speak to them, I'll just give them my email and they email me directly. So it just cuts out everybody that is basically unnecessary in this day and age. And it's so rewarding to immediately cut out the network, which is pointless. The production company, which has basically become pointless. The PR people, which are all pointless. So it's really rewarding having such a difficult time with TV. And now all those people are completely unnecessary.
So you come up with a video every try weekly. When coming up with a new video, do you have a bank of ideas to work from? Or is there a trouble coming up with them?
No, I the one thing I don't have enough of is time. And I could basically work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 10 years and still not have enough time to do all the ideas that I have. I have notebooks full of ideas. I've been thinking of things since I was in college. So today I made a video of something that I made 15 years ago, but I didn't have a camera on me. So I'm just remaking it on camera now because it's a good video concept. So I'm constantly going back and pulling things from my past that I always thought were good that just never got exposure. I have, if you look on my Instagram, I think there's a picture of the back of my door of my workshop, and it's just full of Post-it notes, and they're all the current ideas. I just write it on a Post-it note and stick it on the door of my shop. So every morning when I unlock the door to my shop, I look at the back of the door and I see all the ideas that are currently in flux.
Jimmy, let us know, in terms of safety, is there a risk when you have to make your creations?
Oh yeah, there's always a risk when you use power tools. But I've been using power tools since I was about 7 or 8 years old. So I have a comfortability that most people don't have. So when they watch me and they think that I'm being unsafe. And, you know, it's the same thing as watching a race car driver. Do you think the race car driver is being unsafe? You know it's an unsafe practice, but you know that person has practice doing it. When you watch a BMX bicyclist do a triple flip in the air and not land and break his neck, you know it's dangerous, but you know he's had practice, so you trust watching him.
Right.
So,
okay,
it's the same thing.
And what about the challenges that you have faced so far?
No, I mean, the only challenges is building an audience, and the audience is your reward for working long and consistently. And then when you have an audience, you can then charge people to advertise on your channel, and that's good. And I only advertise with people that are a natural fit. You know, I get offers for all kinds of weird things to advertise, and I only go with things that my audience, I think, would appreciate, like tools and, you know, processes and machines that they could benefit from.
And is there something that you've always wanted to make but haven't been able to do for any reason?
I want to make a motorcycle. And the only reason I haven't is I just don't have the proper space right now. Because if I built a motorcycle in my New York City shop, I'd have to take it up a set of stairs.
Okay.
So, yeah. Or a car. You know, I always want to do cars and motorcycles. And in the next couple of years, I'm hoping to have a workshop that's actually can accommodate a car and a motorcycle.
How big is your team, Jimmy? I mean, making a car or a motorcycle? I mean,
it's just me and, you know, occasionally I have an assistant. Dave Welder has been my assistant for many years. He comes and goes. He's also working hard on his own channel. David's been in a lot of my early videos. So David comes and goes, and occasionally I have some of my college students come and help me from time to time. But it's mostly just me and my buddy Willie lately. So it's usually me and one or two other people. That's usually it.
Jimmy, say if you have the space and there's no constraint to making a car, how long will it take?
Oh, it might take a few months because it's a bigger project. There's a lot more details to attend to.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe a few months.
All right. So they call you DIY master for a reason then.
Yeah.
Okay. Jimmy, so do you think YouTube or similar streaming platforms are the future for content like yours?
Absolutely, because there's so many people that fall between the cracks. You know, there's a certain requirement to be on TV, and being on TV, there's such a huge threshold of gatekeepers, you know, people that decide what you do is interesting or not. And that's the one thing I never liked about TV, because I pitch my TV show to so many people, and there's the one person that says, okay, this is a great idea. But you meet 30 people that say it's not a good idea. And then on YouTube, there is nobody to say anything. It's completely up to the audience. And even if you have a small audience, say, I mean, I'm about to turn 1 million subscribers eventually. I'm at 900,000 subscribers. I know people that have like 500 subscribers, and they're overjoyed that there's a few people watching what they do. So in their life, they're having success. I mean, of course, I feel very successful that I have such a big audience, but the threshold of what makes somebody happy and feel successful is different for everybody. And on YouTube and in the world of self-published media, everybody can attain their goals, or at least fight to get to their goals. In the other world, in the old TV system, there's so many people that will never get recognized because somebody has to make a judgment call whether people want to watch them or not.
Any plans on moving or expanding your channel in different directions?
It's a very touchy subject with the fans, because the minute you try and introduce something new, they say you changed, you don't do the same thing you used to do. You know, the reason I came here is because of this. But if I recently started doing vlogs, I'm up to episode 20, so that's 20 weeks in a row. I do a weekly vlog, and that's been received really well. It took a little bit of time. In the beginning, I was getting a lot of mail saying, you know, you're making a big mistake, because people thought the vlog was going to replace my daily work. But the vlog was just an addition to. And once they realized my vlog is just a place for me to kind of deposit stuff that'll never be in a video, people I meet, the things I learned, you know, the new machines I got. And it's a place for me to actually talk to the camera. And most of my videos, I don't talk to the camera. So the vlog has been a good addition. And if anything, just more regular videos. And if, you know, if anybody wants to get involved, you know, it depends on who that might be. If it's another maker celebrity, I would like to do collaborations with other people, you know, if it worked out.
Any suggestions for people who want to pursue a job like yours, Jimmy?
I give people the advice, just make something every single day, no matter what it is. If it's a sandwich, or if, you know, you're fixing a shirt or your pair of pants with a sewing needle, make something, do something with your hands every single day. Because every time you do something, there's a certain level of problem solving that gets involved. And each one of those little problems that you solve all go into your bank of experience and your bank of knowledge. You might sew a button on a shirt, and then in 5 years from then, you get the same similar situation, and you've already had practice in problem solving that. And so, like I said, any situation you do could then become a similar situation somewhere else. So every day, problem solve and make something. And when you make something, you can't help but problem solve. So, and you know, if your goal is to be on YouTube, just make videos constantly and make good content. And it's really important to be fair with yourself. I know a lot of people make content and they know it's not good, but they're too lazy to change it. So you really have to be honest and fair with, you know, your work, and you got to show stuff to strangers and get a fair opinion.
Thank you very much, Jimmy.
Thank you very much. I hope you guys enjoyed this.
I've been speaking with DIY master Jimmy DiResta. Just talking about it doesn't do it justice. You gotta see it. Check out Jimmy's great creations and pick up a tip or two on his YouTube channel, Jimmy DiResta, or his website, www.jimmydiresta.com. And if you missed part of this interview, don't sweat it. Head on down to our website, bfm.my, to download the podcast, or you can search for it on the BFM mobile app, available on the App Store and on Google Play. I'm Jermaine B, and this is Careers Unusual, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.